Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Women Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. Are you feeling burned out or finding it hard to focus on your goals? Or are you in transition? Well, you're not alone. We all need to activate our superpowers. These are the internal strengths and abilities we all already have but don't use all the time. Superpowers can be cultivated, and they include empathy, love, intuition, courage, and more. As always, this episode is brought to you by Well Woman Life, a global community of women living our best lives. Whether it's your health, relationships, your money, or making an impact in your community and the world, Well Woman Life has you covered. You've made a commitment to not settle, to use your voice, and to live your best life. Well Woman Life offers annual memberships, workshops, and retreats to support you. Check out wellwomanlife.com/Facebook to join our growing community. Now back to the show. I'm speaking with Patricia Newman this morning. Hello and welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. I don't often get to talk to women authors who specifically write for children. So this is super exciting.
I'm glad you think so. I love writing for children, and it's a very exciting job as far as I'm concerned, but I always enjoy talking to people who think the same way.
Yeah, totally. So let's start by asking you, we heard a little bit about you in the introduction, but I want to ask you, what are you working on right now and how does it impact women specifically? I know you write for children, but how does your work impact women and girls?
My current book that will be released May 1st is called Naima's Reason to Smile. And the story takes place in Kenya, and it's about a young girl who wants to go to school more than anything and cannot afford to do so. Even though public schools are free in Kenya, the uniforms and pencils and paper and those kinds of supplies are not. Plus, she would have to pay to ride the matatu or the little taxi to school. So on a subsistence level income, those kinds of costs are prohibitive. So many students in developing countries don't go to school. In fact, I just looked up the numbers yesterday for an article I'm writing, and over 263 million kids in the world do not attend school, mostly because of poverty or war or violence. And half of those are girls. So in writing a book like Naima's Reason to Smile, I'm hoping to shine a light on this problem of equal access to education and inspire students in the U.S. or kids in the U.S. to act, because illiteracy is not just a poor problem, it's everyone's problem, because it's education that allows us to solve problems and make complex decisions and examine all of the sides of the issues before making a decision. So it's my hope that Naima's Reason to Smile and books like Naima's Reason to Smile will encourage parents to, you know, sort of prompt their kids to become global citizens and to care.
Oh, I love it. Okay. How did you decide
you know, how did you decide to do that particular story? And so just for like background, are all of your books about, you know, sort of real issue-based, you know, stories about girls?
Well, that's an interesting question because I do write a lot of nonfiction. Even though Name is Reason to Smile is fiction, it's based on an actual school in Mtwapa, Kenya. Most of my books are nonfiction and they are about environmental issues that, you know, sort of bother me. And I feel like they are injustices in the world. And Name is Reason to Smile fits into that category. It's an injustice happening in the world. And my books usually come to me. I don't go out and search for them. And Name is Reason to Smile is no different. A librarian from Long Island came to me with a proposal. She had originally talked to a writer friend of mine who said that, you know, yeah, I'm not right for this story idea. And my writer friend referred Donna, the librarian, to me. And Donna told me the story of how she is working with this organization called Reason to Smile. It's a nonprofit organization that supports the Jambo Jipya School in Mtwapa, Kenya. And the Jambo Jipya School is run by a Kenyan woman named Christine Mwende. And she educates the students who can't afford to be educated, just like NEMA. And as you may imagine, this school needs a lot of support because many of the students cannot pay the full tuition. So they are subsidized by Reason to Smile's nonprofit organization. So anyway, when Donna came to me, she said, you know, this is a story worth telling. And the more I learned, the more I agreed with her. And I started writing. I mean, it's as simple as that. After doing a lot of research and interviews and watching videos and looking at photos, I started writing.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so what kind of research did you have to do for the story? What was your process?
Well, one thing that helped immeasurably was having been to Kenya. I went several years ago, so I was familiar with the climate and the wildlife and some of the cities. I did not go to Mtwapa, but I did go to some of the other cities in Kenya. And then the other thing that helped specifically for this book was, of course, interviewing Donna, who is the executive director of Reason to Smile and travels to Africa a couple of times a year. I interviewed the founder of the organization, Keela Dates Grimet, and I also interviewed via email, they call her Teacher Madam, Christine Mwende, the founder of the school. Mm-hmm. And then I read several of the children's biographies, kind of where they came from, what their parental situations were like, how they came to Reason to Smile, how they came to Jambo Jipya School. And I watched a lot of video of the kids in action, playing, reciting their lessons, singing, saluting the flag, just doing things that kids do at school. So all of that went into this story. And there are a number of references to the wildlife in Kenya because I wanted U.S. kids to understand sort of the geography of the area. If I could, I'll read one specific page to you. Nema is walking to the town on a dusty path with a heavy basket of fruit on her head. That's what she does for her family. She sells fruit. And she says, mile after mile, my bare feet trace the dusty path that unwinds like a cheetah's tail all the way to town. And you see the picture of this curving path, but you also see a cheetah by the side of the road. And that's not to say that Nema walks to town by, you know, carnivorous cheetahs every day. But there's a little bit of literary license there in showing young readers what this animal looks like in this setting.
Ah, okay. And Patricia, how has your story been received here? Have you had the response that you were looking for?
I can't answer that question yet because it's not even on bookstore shelves. It hasn't been released.
Oh, right. Okay. when is it going to be released?
May 1st.
Okay. All right. So, and where can people find it?
It's up on Amazon for pre-order. It's on my publisher's website for pre-order, Light Switch Learning. And I imagine that you could find it or order it from any chain or independent bookstore in your area.
So Patricia, what is your next step after releasing this book? What would you like to see happen?
What would I like to see happen? That's a good question. Well, I would like it to get in the hands of young readers. I would like it to inspire them. I would like it to make a difference in their lives. And I would also like for a reader to come up to me and say, I loved Name is Reason to Smile, you know, and for whatever reason. It's just amazing when a five-year-old comes up to you and says, I have loved this book my whole life. You know,
yeah.
It just doesn't get any better than that. Excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, how do you expect young girls will relate to the story, like young American girls or, you know, in developed countries?
In developed countries, I hope the story touches their heart. And I hope they ask, you know, can they help girls like Nema? But on another level, Nema is, she's a planner. She has a dream and she goes after it in however she can figure out to go after it. You know, she just tries to make it work, tries and fails a couple of times before she makes it work. And I want any child who reads this story to understand that achieving your dreams isn't always easy. But if it's a dream that you have, it's worth trying and trying and trying again. And it's also a worthwhile goal to have dreams. At the very back of the book, as part of the back matter, after the story concludes, there is a spread, a two-page spread called Our Dreams. And it says, do you think about the future like Nema does? Do you know what you want to be when you grow up? Jumbo Jipya students share dreams from their dream baskets. And we've got pictures of seven different students at the real Jumbo Jipya school telling readers their dreams.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very, very powerful spread. And it brings U.S. readers closer to the kids at this faraway school.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Patricia, we're going to get into our segment called Superpowers for Success in just a minute. But I want to ask you real quick before that. How did you, you know, for listeners who may be thinking, well, I'd like to be an author, I'd like to write a book, especially in a specific genre like children's books. How did you get started? Like, was it something you just always knew you were going to do? Or did it happen by, you know, chance? Or how did that happen?
I always laugh when people ask me this question, because I didn't know I was always going to write. In fact, when I was a kid, I did not like to write. I was sort of afraid of any kind of creative writing, especially because I was shy and I was afraid of sharing it with people, thinking that they might laugh. Mm-hmm. So it's only really as I became an adult, had kids of my own. One day, I remember it very clearly, my kids and I were sitting on our sofa with a stack of library books. I think our library at the time allowed us to check out 60 books. And we pushed the limit every time.
Yeah.
And this one particular day, my mother-in-law was visiting us from Florida. And she said to me, Patty, you could totally do this. And I like to say when I tell this story, especially within her hearing, that I'm the only daughter-in-law ever that has listened to her mother-in-law.
That's funny. So you took her advice.
I took her advice and tried. And there was definitely, you know, there was definitely an apprenticeship. You don't, you know, if you're lucky, you get something published right away. But there are lots of small successes and lots of missteps before you're published, especially in the field of children's books, because it's extremely competitive and it's just darn hard to do. It's probably one of the hardest things I have ever done. So you have to have a lot of perseverance. You have to have sort of a an I can do it attitude, even when nobody's pushing you and there's no deadline. So you have to be a self-starter in this business.
Yeah, totally. Why did you think you could do it? I mean, besides your mother-in-law saying you could.
I've always been a reader. I love to read. I'm the kid that whose parents say, you know, go out and rake the yard, and I bring a book. Or, you know, if I, my husband laughs at me. We went to a basketball game the other night, an NBA game, and I asked, could I bring a book? Because I'd much rather read than watch basketball.
Right. But it doesn't always mean a doer becomes a maker. So.
Yes, I understand. But I realized that the more I wrote, and, you know, at first I was writing for myself. I didn't submit anything to editors for publication. Mm-hmm. And the more I wrote, the more I realized I had something to say. So I kept at it because I wanted to say what I wanted to say.
So you found your voice through actually doing it.
I guess I did. Yeah. I guess I did.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I feel like that internal confidence that comes with just knowing that really solid internal quiet place inside of you that's like, I just know that I can do this and that I need to do this. That comes for a lot of people in different ways. And I'm so that's what I was interested in, is how that came for you.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't overstate the confidence, because there are a number of projects that I say yes to. And then there are sometime, you know, right during the third of the way through, where I sort of throw up my hands and go, I can't do this. I don't know why I said yes to this project. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get beyond it. You keep plodding, you keep, trial and error, solving problems. Sometimes you have to just learn when to stop in terms of, getting up from your desk and doing something else and letting your conscious brain rest while your subconscious works on the problem.
Yeah.
And almost always I can come back to the table then and solve that problem. One of the things, not to be sharing too much information, but the shower or being underwater in a pool is a great place to solve problems.
Oh, I love it.
Another way I've been solving problems is I lately took up piano, and I'm about 2 months into my lessons. And now if I'm having a problem, I get up and go bang out a few scales.
That's great. Cause I actually was going to ask you, okay, so when you take that break to change the environment, change your brain pattern, what is it that you do? So water is one. And the other one was you just mentioned, which just flew out of my head.
Piano.
The piano. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
So water and piano. Yeah. Very interesting. And the water is so cool. So you take a shower or even go for a swim.
Yeah, or I'll dunk in the pool. I don't even have to swim so much, you know, because I can't hold my breath forever. Yeah. But it's just that sensation of, it's almost like a sensory deprivation feeling, you know, and it's a relaxing feeling where you just sort of let it all go. Mm. Some problems are solved not because you think about them, but because you don't think about them.
Yeah.
Haven't you ever had a problem and then you've slept on it and in the morning you wake up and you have the answer?
Yeah.
That's because you let your conscious mind relax so your subconscious can work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do talk about that a lot on the Well Woman Show, that type of thing. But I love specific examples of how people do that because it all sounds great in theory, but to give people actual practical, like, you know, try dunking your head underwater. Like, I love that. Or, you know, playing the piano, it just completely shifts your brain pattern so that, so the subconscious can work, right?
Right. Or sometimes I'll cook, you know, make a recipe you've never made before. So you have to read and concentrate on the recipe and you leave those writing problems behind. And then when you come back to your desk, all of a sudden you have the answer.
Yeah. No, I love that. My mom's a writer. And so she's actually staying with me right now and she's doing a lot of writing and she tends to talk about this in this way. Like she'll let things kind of percolate and like leave it for a while and go and, you know, play with the kids or just do something completely different to shift things. And then she'll go back to it or she'll go to bed and it'll all come out in her sleep. You know, she'll wake up.
Right.
She'll just wake up knowing like, oh, that's what the character is going to do.
Right. Exactly. Another tactic that I sometimes use in my two of my recent books, Zoo Scientist to the Rescue and Sea Otter Heroes, I'm writing about, you know, a very specific sequence of events in each book. But the opening chapter and the closing chapter for both of those books were sort of, you know, the theme of the book, you know, the big stuff, what I wanted to say as an author. And when I start books like that, I have no idea how to frame what I really want to say. I know basically what I want to say, but I don't have the specific words yet to frame it. So what I will do is I'll start writing in the middle of the book.
Oh.
So I start writing at chapter 2 or chapter 3, something I know about. And then as those chapters come together, then it becomes much clearer what I want to say in chapter 1.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, get to the meat of the story first, and then you can go back and figure out how it starts.
Exactly.
Huh. I like that. Okay, awesome. Well, let's actually move into the Superpowers for Success segment and ask you the first question, which is, what does success in life mean for you, Patricia Newman?
Oh, that is such a hard question. Success has so many different parameters, but I guess for me, I never went into writing wanting to be, a gigantic superstar. I write for me and the kids who read the books. All of the other accolades and really fantastic things that have happened to me along the way are just that. They're really fantastic things that I never counted on and never planned on. So I guess success for me is mostly defined as, am I a happy person? Am I a loving, caring, fun person to be with, both for my immediate family and my extended family and friends? And I think if the answer to that question is yes, then the other stuff sort of follows.
And what do you think happiness is? So you said, am I a happy person? It's pretty much
time. It's not just smiling all the time. It's, does my work fulfill me? Do I enjoy getting up every morning and going to work? Am I helping my friends who need help or my family when they need help? Am I a good friend? Am I a good sister or cousin or mother? You know, do I have empathy for people? So all of those things wound up together define happiness for me.
Love it. Okay. And when did you know you were really good at what you do?
this is, I'm laughing because there are times when I still don't know that I'm good at what I do. You know, and the reason I say that is because when you start a book from the very, very beginning, you know, even though I've written, you know, 17 some odd books or whatever the number is, every time you start a brand new book, you start from the beginning. Yeah, I know the basics of writing, and I know how to put together a story, and I know that my nonfiction books are going to require photos and back matter. You know, I know things like that, but for every single book, you have to find your way into the story. So there's always that time where you feel like you have no idea what is going on. But I think now, because I have a number of books under my belt, that I know I can find my way to the other end of that process. So it's not as terrifying as it used to be.
Yeah.
So when did that happen? Oh, geez, I have no idea. Yesterday? I'm not sure.
Now, very, very many quote unquote successful women give that answer, you know, that it's like, I'm still figuring that out. Like, I'm still, you know, because it's a process. It's not like, oh, I'm done. Like, I'm just good at what I do, and now it's over. It's a constant process and a journey.
And then when you live a somewhat creative life, as a writer does, you're always trying to improve your craft. You're always trying to write a better sentence, a better description, you know, a better story. So sometimes you look at your earlier work and you think, oh, you know, I would have changed this sentence to say this instead of the one I wrote, the one that was published. So, and you can't go back and do it over. It's published. It's done. We're always, creative people are always learning by from their previous projects.
Okay. And so, Patricia, describe a personal habit that you have that contributes to your well-being.
I go to the gym. I find that I get cranky if I don't exercise. And I also have a neurological disease that attacks my peripheral nerves. So my lower legs and my arms, from my elbows down to my hands, suffer with this disease. So I have to keep myself trim and as strong as I possibly can. So going to the gym helps. And it's one of those ways that I turn off what's going on in my conscious mind and let my subconscious work, like going underwater or baking or playing the piano. It's just another way to get my brain doing something different.
Yeah. And just on that note, again, because we talked so much about it, the sensory deprivation that you talked about, it's the result, or the process and the result, are similar to meditation. So
yes,
when you have an activity that you love that puts you into that meditative state, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't really have time to meditate. I don't know how to meditate. I don't know what to do. Can't just sit there. And so what I say is, you know, pick an activity that puts you in that state of mind. So for me, that is cooking. For you, it sounds like it's, you know, maybe baking and playing the piano and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I would encourage listeners to think about what activities you really enjoy doing, usually by yourself. You know, usually this is kind of a by yourself activity when you get into that state of mind, that can really help you shift like that.
I agree. And I think that there's no one right answer. Some people, when they write, they'll go to a noisy coffee shop because they like that sort of surround sound stimulation, and it just allows them to dive into their writing world a little bit easier. And some people like complete quiet. So there's just really no right answer for what gets your brain engaged.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to ask you, what superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
You know, I have to laugh. I suppose you mean beyond standing in line at the grocery store and having it being the slowest line ever. my husband always jokes that I have a superpower that if I watch any sporting event on TV, it is 100% going to go into overtime. But you know, another superpower, that's a really hard, you know, I don't really think of myself as a superwoman, with superpowers, but I guess the self-starter part of it, has really come into play in being a writer. You just cannot do this job unless you are willing to sit down without a deadline, without a boss, without a somebody or something hanging over you that says you have to finish. You get through it because you want to get through it. And it's really that, simply because you want to do it. And it's really quite a remarkable feeling.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. As a writer, I may have expected you to say something like, you know, well, I've always been a storyteller and that's my superpower. And I realized it later in life when I became an author, that kind of thing. So
but see, I wasn't a storyteller and I was afraid of writing. So right. That one doesn't really apply to me. Yeah. But this whole, when I was a kid in school, I was always self-motivated. There was never a problem. I was a kid that went to school, listened, got my work done. I was a nerd, you know, pure and simple. I was a nerdy kid. And that whole attitude of wanting to get things done purely for the satisfaction of doing them has served me very well as a writer.
Cool. Okay. And Patricia, what do you do when you have a setback, like a major disappointment? How do you handle that and get back on track?
Oh, you mean besides tears?
Well, yeah, you start with tears. Yes, that's good.
Well, you know, I when I visit schools, I have this roll of rejection letters that I've taped together end to end, and I throw it out with a flourish, and I tell kids that this, my first book, Jingle the Brass, was rejected 16 times, and I hold this line of letters over my head, and I say to them, you know, did I cry? And they always go, no, you know, big, loud. I've got a big number of kids, a big assembly, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then I look at them, I went, of course I cried. It's disappointing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the tears do flow, but I think what I do most is something else. I go to the gym, I bake, I play the piano, I do something else to process, you know, sort of that grief almost. And once I have processed it and thought about it, sometimes the disappointment is a rejection letter from an editor that I had really hoped to sell to. And once I've sort of at least done the basics to process those emotions, I can turn back to her or his letter and figure out exactly what she's saying to me and try to figure out how to make the manuscript better. Because I have to get out of that emotional place of disappointment to be able to go back into the emotions of the story to fix it.
Yeah, and it takes an incredible amount of persistence and confidence to say, okay, fine, you didn't accept this, but I'm going to keep going.
Right. And I do have a group of women who meet with me every twice a month, roughly. And there are four of us, and we are a critique group that's been together for a number of years. And we share news of the industry, but we also share manuscripts and comment on them. And we also help solve each other's problems. So, you know, if I receive a rejection that's particularly disappointing and I'm not really clear on what the editor is trying to tell me, I'll bring the letter to the group and say, what do you think she's saying to me? And how does that apply to my manuscript? And we brainstorm on ways to solve it. So I know I don't have to do this alone.
Yeah. That's one of the things that comes up a lot in my interviews with women is the need for a community of women to, you know, to problem solve with and share with. That comes up a lot. So just a couple more quick questions here. The topic of your story is very interesting and relevant in light of a lot of what's going on in our country and globally. Do you identify as a feminist?
Absolutely. Without question.
What does that mean for you?
Equal pay, equal respect, equal opportunity, an awareness of the fact that women play an important role. Just to go back to Naima's Reason to Smile, for instance, it's about a girl, as I said, who wants to go to school, equal access to education. If you look at the Malala Fund, which was an organization started by Malala. I wish I could pronounce her last name, but I think you know who I mean, the Pakistani
yes.
girl who was attacked by the Taliban.
Yeah.
She started this foundation, and some of the research that they have done says that educating girls allows a country to come back quicker from civil unrest. Educating girls creates healthier families, educating girls helps keep the girls healthier, but when they have families, it leads to their children being healthier. Also, educating girls increases the economic viability of a community. And the last one shocked me. A lot of my nonfiction is environmental or conservation based. So this last one really shocked me because I was always having trouble trying to fit Naima's Reason to Smile in with some of the nonfiction work I've done. But here is the link right here. According to the Brookings Institute, a girl with 12 years of education has fewer children than a girl with 0 years of education. So a girl with 0 years of education might have four or five kids, but a girl with 12 girls with 12 years of education might have one or two kids. So if educating girls reduces the population, then we can help fight climate change.
Mm, I love your connection there. Yeah. No, it's a huge topic, and I want to. This is making me want to ask you another question. Getting off track a little bit here, but I just want to ask you, if you were to write an equivalent story of Naima's Reason to Smile for about American girls, what would that story be? Because clearly, our girls don't have the same exact issues as Naima, but we still have, you know, issues that we're working on. What would you say to that?
Gosh, what would that be? For the same age group or a different age?
Yeah, same age group.
Same age group. So that would be, you know, something like 4 years old to 8 years old. What would I write about? Gosh, I'm not sure.
Well, maybe that's your next book.
maybe, you know, it could have something to do with the new climate in schools where, you know, we're not just having earthquake drills, but we're having active shooter drills. It could be something on the increasing diversity of classrooms and how to, not how to, but talk about different stories. I guess that's one of the points of NEMA too, is to bring stories to kids of other cultures, other places, other religions, other viewpoints, and to just try to keep increasing that, I guess that overall appreciation of somebody who's not like us.
Yeah. Okay. One last question. What are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
I am reading two books right now. One is called The Weight of Ink by Rachel. Gosh, I'm sorry, Rachel, but I can't remember your last name. It's a wonderful book that takes place both in present day and the 1600s about the Jewish community after the Inquisition, and then in the present day part is two historians who find these papers and what they mean for the whole community. I'm only near the very beginning, so I don't know how it ends yet, but I'm really loving it. The writing is beautiful. And then the other book that I'm reading is called The Sellout, and it won the Man Booker Prize. I'm not sure which year, but I've just started that one, and it's about a man who's in front of the Supreme Court. He's a black man, but he's in front of the Supreme Court because he reinstituted slavery in his community. And I'm really anxious to find out how this book ends and why this character decided that this was a good idea. But the writing is smart and funny and caustic. It's phenomenal.
Ooh. Okay, two really good recommendations there. We'll put links to those also in the show notes. And Rachel, looking at my notes here about the author of The Weight of Ink.
Right, Rachel, whose last name I can't remember. Please look her up, The Weight of Ink.
We will, yeah. We'll put the link in the show notes for sure. And Patricia, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. And I want to tell you that you're doing such important work. And I really appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. And as are you. I appreciate you as well. The fact that you are able to talk to so many different people who inspire you and hopefully inspire your listeners.
Well, you're definitely doing that. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome.
That's it for our show today. Remember, if you need support to live your Well Woman life, head over to wellwomanlife.com/Facebook to join us. Our monthly live event, Well Women Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women, leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Women Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you are listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @WellWomanLife. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.